Then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit on Moses' seat. Therefore, do whatever they teach you and follow it. But don't do as they do, for they do not practice what they teach. They tie up heavy burdens, hard to bear, and they lay them on the shoulders of others. They themselves are unwilling to lift a finger to move them. They do all their deeds to be seen by others, for they make their phylacteries broad and their fringes long. They love to have the place of honor at banquets and to the best seats in the synagogue and to be greeted with respect in the marketplace and to have people call them rabbi. But you are not to be called rabbi, for you have one teacher, and all of you are students. And call no one your father on earth before, because you have one father, the one in heaven. Nor are you to be called instructors, because, for you have one instructor, the Messiah. The greatest among you will be your servant. All who exalt themselves will be humbled, and all who humble themselves will be exalted." There ends the reading.
All right, I'm going to give you a little quick rock history quiz. This is from the, I think the early 90s. I could be off by just a few years. How many of you, raise your hand if you remember a rock group named Milli Vanilli? Okay, how many listen to their music? You confess it, you'll admit it. What do you suppose they are remembered for now? Faking it. Lip syncing. Exactly. Now, I listened to their music at the time. It was fun. Never bought any of their CDs. But you see, what happened with these two young men is record producers, marketers, got a hold of them. They had a look that was different. It was striking. It was attractive. They had good dance moves. So they were very marketable. And those folks made money. Somehow or another, they decided it wasn't necessary for them to do their own singing. Now, it's one thing, it's a little different when you say, look back at some of the movie musicals of the 50s and 60s, for those of you who like to watch musicals, and you think of like The King and I, and Deborah Kerr, who did not do her own singing. She had a ghost singer. Or you look at West Side Story, in which Natalie Wood had someone else do her singing vocals for her, and they were dubbed. But you see, these two people were actors. They might not have done their own singing, but they at least did their own acting. And yet, Milli Vanilli were very content to walk up on the stage and receive a Grammy Award and take that trophy in their hand for Best New Artist, in spite of the fact that they didn't actually do the work. And then when everyone found out the sham, they lost what credibility they may have had in the music world. It didn't matter that they were actually somewhat decent singers themselves. Nobody would listen to them at that point. They were comfortable in receiving the advantages and the fame and the money, but they weren't terribly concerned with the responsibility or honesty in their craft. You know, we look at our reading from Matthew this morning and the Pharisees that Jesus is speaking of in today's gospel. You might playfully call them the Milli Vanilli of the first century religious world, at least first century Palestine. For in public, they did some pretty fancy dance steps, and they dressed the part. But the substance wasn't necessarily there to back it up. You see, the Pharisees were the religious elite of the day. You talked about the phylacteries. Most of us don't know what a phylactery is, let alone wear one, but it's part of the Jewish religious garb, and part of their shawl, where it talked about making the fringes long, was just to really dress it up, make it more ostentatious, more noticeable. So they were the religious elite of the day, and they interpreted scriptures for the masses, for the common people who under their assumption, weren't smart enough to do it for themselves. They interpreted the codes of righteousness and cleanliness and demanded a strict and stringent adherence on the part of others. They were quick to judge folks who sometimes fell short of the mark, and yet they could very easily rationalize their own shortcomings and inadequacies. What they said in public didn't always match what they did in private. They loved being admired, feared, and respected because they liked the appearance of being righteous people. But lest you get any notions that this was an ancient version of an arrogant clergy that was too big for their britches, these were not the priests. These were the lay leaders of the church, the respected religious folks in the community. They were you. Okay, we're not going to bury them completely in negativity. The Pharisees were not evil. They were not devoid of values. They did attend worship regularly. They prayed. They read the scriptures. They thoroughly enjoyed the company of one another and the nurture and companionship of their peers. They were wonderful towards those who were like them, those who knew and understood the scriptures the way they did, those who had gone to temple all their lives, those who followed the rules and lived like they did. They had a great time when they were together, and they truly enjoyed the blessing of a select gathering of friends. But they didn't care too much for the people in the streets, the commoners. In fact, they avoided them. They looked down on them because they weren't as clean. Maybe they didn't dress as nicely as they did, or had good jobs, or stable family lives. Maybe they had one too many tattoos or body piercings. Maybe they seemed to find one mistake after another. Found them, but they were still human beings, in spite of how the Pharisees felt and tried to make them feel about themselves. If the Pharisees had their way, they'd have just kept things nice and cozy in the temple, just let in the people like them and keep things orderly, neat, and predictable. What a wonderful place it would have been for them. But no wonder the common folks were losing interest in the temple. Who wants to go somewhere where you're made to feel inferior? Where instead of lifting you up and giving you hope and unconditional love, you get fashion criticism and are made to feel that you're not quite lovable? Who needs that? Seems the Pharisees forgot that being religious leaders, being those who are respected in the community, isn't about privilege. It's about calling. They forgot that their position required of them responsibility. Responsibility to represent God to the world. Not in a way that made God appear snooty and standoffish, but that showed people God's radical stop at nothing to get you back kind of love. They forgot that it wasn't a limited commodity only to share with their friends. They were supposed to drag in the stranger and the really strange. They were supposed to not just welcome them if they happened to find their way to the place and walk in the door, but go out and look for them, invite them, pick them up, drive them, bring them in, so that all could be in the family of faith and no brother or sister would be left out in the cold. What a shame they forgot. Imagine what it could have been like if they were advocates for the poor. If they loved the kind of folks who, to quote my mother, had been rode hard and put up wet. Imagine what it could have been like if they hadn't sat in their comfy seats of honor, but went out into the streets and asked a tired single mother to come and have their place. Imagine what it could have been like if they'd listened to the alien, the fatherless, and the widow, the ones that they had been called to protect and to serve. What could it have been like if Jesus could have worked with them and through them instead of around them and in spite of them? It's amazing what those Pharisees could have done. If they'd have dismissed the privilege, enjoyed the blessings of the faith community, but kept perspective and understood it wasn't just about them. If they could have remembered that they were missionaries and not consumers, what amazing things God could do through them. Okay, I know you're all smart people. I know you've seen through my veneer, as feeble as it was. I am not really talking about some ancient dead guys. I'm talking about us. There's a song performed by Christian artist Stephen Curtis Chapman, who writes most of his songs and actually sings all of them. And his song is called The Walk. In the chorus, Chapman sings, "Well, you can run with the big dogs, you can fly with the eagles, you can jump through all the hoops and climb the ladder to the top. But when it all comes down, you know it all comes down to the walk." What is the walk? It's doing justice, loving mercy, walking humbly with your God. It's saving the lost and freeing the oppressed. It's realizing that love, Christian love, breeds not warm sentiment, but action. Being a disciple isn't about having a respectable, privileged reputation in the community. And it's not just about how good the faith community makes you feel. It's about being tireless and sharing that radical, redeeming love of God and Christ. And not just with your circle of friends, not with the people you like, but with the people that you don't like. The ones you'd prefer not to notice when you're in the stores or on the streets. It's about being Jesus to the ones that you don't approve of and loving them right where they are. Remember who Jesus ate dinner with, tax collectors and prostitutes. And we are called to love people right where they are. Gay, straight, employed, on welfare, sober, addicted, parenting children with or without the benefit of marriage. All of them. If you limit the love and you save it like a precious commodity only to be shared with good, nice folks like you and me, that love is going to die. But if you go out there and you do wild, radical, loving things, the kind of things that Jesus would do if he were here, amazing things will happen. Transformations you might never have imagined will occur in you as well as in others. And the love will live on. And the best part of all is that you'll get to help happen. You'll get to help it happen.